Questions?
I got all the homework done last night for this class. I'm so excited.
Don't you always have the homework done?
Yeah. Not always. Sometimes, like, I got hung up on a question or two.
Questions?
Did you find my quiz?
I don't think so. I can check online to see what I gave you, but I don't see it here. So, final is Monday. I think the times are 8 and 3:30. You can come to either. Say again?
So it's either 8 or 3:30?
I think so.
Okay. Are you gonna be like, at a certain number of kids, then I won't accept any more?
No, I think everyone could fit in this room if worse came to worse.
Okay.
So a handful of people don't want to do it on Monday. If you're in that status, you should tell me so we can arrange an alternative time. Usually we have a help session before it. And you can see the vote from the previous class. I don't think it's worth voting on anything besides Friday at 1 and Friday at 4 and Saturday at 2. So people are checking up on that. The lab manuals are in room 104 for 106. So 106 will start on day one. So if you're particularly in a day one lab, you might want to pick up a lab manual now as opposed to later.
For next semester?
Next semester, yeah.
I have a day one lab. What day is that? Yeah, day one.
I don't remember what day I
have. Well, you can check. There's plenty of time. They'll be there for a while.
Okay.
We ready to vote? No, we're not going to vote on the quiz. So, who's for Friday at 1-ish? You can vote as many times as you want. I see.
As many times as you want?
Yes.
Okay.
We can vote as many times as you want.
Yes. I see 4. Who's for Friday at 4? I see 2. Ty. Who's for Saturday at 2? 2.
Can you help me for Friday at 1?
Say again?
No, I'm just...
Oh, you were voting for Saturday at 2?
Delayed. I had a delayed hand for Friday at 1.
No, she never put her hand up.
No, I did, but you didn't see it.
So there seemed to be... seems to be a tie for Friday at 1 or Friday at 4, so...
No, you didn't see her hand.
No, you didn't see her hand. There's supposed to be 5 votes for Friday at 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Either way, I was just going to have you re-vote on those. Well, let's do it anyway, just to make absolutely sure. Who's for Friday at 1? There are 5, and who's for Friday at 4? There are 2. Okay, so it's Friday at 1. Now, the precise time. Does anyone care whether it's 12:30 or, 2 o'clock or?
Like a little before one.
So you think 12:30 is better? Does any other complaints?
But then I have to eat soon.
Actually, I think I have to.
Oh my gosh, that's excuse.
All right, we can go at 12:30. That's fine.
Okay. So I don't know that there are enough people who might be using this room that somebody else may grab it before I do, but I will grab the room for sometime on Friday afternoon, hopefully that time.
I'm supposed to eat that early in the day.
You get up earlier in the morning. Okay, so last time, not so many equations, right? So it had to be an easy time. So somebody said whether it was going to be easier on the quiz than what we had last time. The answer is no, it'll be harder. So the really only had 2 equations. We have the equation for wave velocity. It's the wavelength times the frequency. The wavelength is the distance between crests or troughs or equivalent zeros. Not to be confused with the amplitude, which is how high the wave is from equilibrium. And frequency we've had before, it's the number of cycles per second or one over the period. Do notice two T's that mean different things. The wave velocity equation involved the tension in the string and the mass per length, which the book called mu. We had some problems with the Doppler effect, where we saw that if things were coming together, the frequency was higher than it would be otherwise. If things were moving apart, the frequency was lower. Any questions? So the main topic for today is how waves interact. And they interact in about the simplest possible way. They just add up. And the name for that principle is called superposition. And what this means is if, let's say, we have a wave source here, and we have a wave source here, and at some spot we have both waves simultaneously present, then the wave height at this location would just be the sum of the wave height you would have for this guy by itself and the wave height you would have for that guy by itself. You simply add them up.
So if the frequency of one is half a period off from the other, do they like cancel each other out?
For sure. Yep. So that's called interference. And it seems to mean the opposite of what I've said, but what you've said is correct. If one is trying to make a high and as one is going to try and make a low, then we're going to get zero out of it. So the result is that we can have things that pile up. That's constructive interference. That's where things add up to produce a net positive result. Then we can have destructive interference. It's kind of two possibilities. Yes?
You said the constructive adds up to zero?
No. So constructive is where things align to give us an extra large amount.
Okay.
And destructive is where they would typically, one would be trying to make a high and one would trying to be make a low, so we would get nothing as a result.
Okay.
So obviously those are kind of qualitative terms. The main idea is that when we add these things up, sometimes it could be bigger than normal, sometimes it could be smaller than normal. It all depends on what you're adding.
What if the magnitude of one of them is larger than the other, and they're still the half period off? Would the bigger ones still have some authority, or would they cancel anyway?
So we just add them up, right? So I think this is the kind of situation you were talking about.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, we're going to get something like about that, right?
Okay.
There's nothing special that goes on. All we do is add them up.
So the superposition, by adding the waves together, they get bigger. How is that different than like constructive interference?
It's not. So superposition is the overall thing that just says you add things up. And then we have kind of subset of that where we're talking about exactly the same thing when we're using the use constructive interference and destructive interference form. Okay, so if we have something like a wave, you know, so this could be a wave, for example, that is moving this way. How could we describe that? And we're not really looking for the sort of equation that we're going to plug and chug in, but just kind of mathematically, how would we describe something that's moving like that? And the answer would be, of course, it's going to involve some sort of trigonometric function. I don't care whether it's cosine or sine. And when we go through a wavelength, we go through a cycle. So there has to be something that is kind of like 2 pi divided by a wavelength times x. So that if x increases by a wavelength, we have an extra 2 pi radians, and we've gone through a cycle. And there has to be something kind of like 2 pi over the period times time, so that if we go through a period, we're back to where we started. So we have simultaneously oscillations in position and oscillations in time. And it turns out that with this minus sign, what this represents is a wave that is going in the positive x direction. And it's no difficulty to figure out what that velocity is, right? It's the wavelength times the frequency being 1 over the period. If we want to have a wave that's going in the opposite direction, then we just use a plus sign there. And I guess I could put an A here to represent some sort of amplitude. So what happens if I have waves of equal size going in opposite directions? Something like that. And it turns out that's pretty easy to make because I can just have something reflect off of the far side. So I'm sending a wave down here, but it's reflecting back. So in the middle, we have two waves that are going equally and oppositely. How does that work? So we could start out, for example, something like this. And of course, as these waves move, we're going to get some sort of separation. So we're starting out here, of course, with constructive interference. So we'd get extra big amplitudes. But if you think about it, a little bit later, we'd get destructive interference. Everything would now add up to zero. So this means if you were to look at this wave, at one time it would be really big, and then a little bit later in time, it would be flat. And if we go a little bit later in time, we can get back to constructive interference. So, I mean, it's kind of surprising that you can add two things up and get nothing as a result, but sometimes you get lots as a result. So it's not violating conservation of energy or any fundamental principle like that. So how does that kind of work mathematically? If I have these two waves simultaneously present, what is the result of the having these two waves simultaneously present? So what I want to do is superimpose two waves. Kind of like that. And figure out what the mathematical result is going to be. And the things are made a little bit simpler by using a trigonometric identity. And that trigonometric identity is the follows. So if I have So if I have the cosine of A plus the cosine of B, it turns out the result is twice the cosine of the average of A and B times the cosine of the difference of A and B. So if I call all of this A and I call all of this B, I can use this trigonometric identity to show me what the result is of having one wave that's going this way and one wave that's going that way simultaneously present. And I hope you can see the result is going to be sometimes having twice the possible amplitude. We've seen that, right? That sort of situation there, we're going to have a particularly big amplitude. Then we're going to get the cosine of these things added together, and notice that the time term is just going to cancel out. And when I subtract these two terms, now the x term is going to cancel out and the time term is going to add. Yes. And the t is not particularly obvious.
Are x and t a and b?
Say again?
Are x and t a and b?
No, so all of this is a and all of that is b. So here I'm adding up two cosines of a and b, and I claim that dead mathematicians say that that's the result. That?
Well, you're saying 2 times the cosine of, you already a plus b times cosine of a minus b, right? Okay.
Yes.
Which is this equation used for then? Is this for both constructed and b? Or, like, how does this relate to something?
Why this equation? So this is kind of in the nature of a proof, just to kind of understand what we're going to get. So we're probably never going to plug into any of these equations.
Oh, so these equations aren't like...
They're not plug and chug sorts of equations. They're equations that just kind of demonstrate mathematically what we get when we add two cosines. And so the result is something that is oscillating in time times something that's oscillating in space. So if we pick a location where cosine is big, where this is, for example, 0, because cosine of 0 is 1, then there'll always be a big answer there. And there it'll just oscillate back and forth. If we pick, say, a value where cosine is small, then there'll always be small there. Yeah. So what does this look like? So the easy way to have superposition like this is to bounce it off a far end, which is what I'm doing there. And I can produce a wave. And what we get is a spot where it always adds up to 0. Right, so if I were going to try and draw this, it would look kind of like this. At any given instant, it would look like a wave, but at various times, we get various other possibilities. So here we have what's called the node, where we have a 0. And these spots where occasionally it gets really big, those are called antinodes. And let's kind of keep a chart on what we're going to see. So let's make a chart that is the frequency and the wavelength and a picture. So I can read off the frequency on this device. It's 12 hertz. And the picture looks kind of like this, right? What's the wavelength? Yeah, it's whatever this length is, right? One wavelength is going to be whatever that length of the two spots separated are. So if I up the frequency, if that's the best possible value, let's see. I think the best possible is about 17.7. And if I were going to draw a picture of that, it'd look kind of like this, right? There are two nodes, and there are three antinodes. So what's the wavelength?
Two-thirds of L.
Two-thirds of L, right? This piece would be a wavelength, and it breaks up into thirds, so that would be two-thirds of L. So this is the picture, right? That's what it would look like at one instant, and so the full length is one wavelength. Okay. So here, this would be one wavelength, but it's only two-thirds of the length. So what's the wavelength of this guy?
One-fourth L.
Say again?
One-fourth L.
I don't think so.
Or one-half L.
So this has like that. One, two, oh, too much, right? One, two, three, one, two, three, four. And the frequency, about 23.5. So what's the wavelength of this one? So it's got five equal pieces, and we want two of them, right? So two fifths. I'm not sure I'm going to try and draw it. And the frequency is about 29.2. Okay, so these are resonant, so-called resonant frequencies. Can anyone think of the formula for it? So what's the formula for those numbers? Well, it's a little bit easier to figure out if I multiply everything by 2. Because then it's 2, 3, 4, 5. We believe that? So if I call this, might call this mode number n, 2, 3, 4, 5. In general, this would be 2L divided by n. So this n number is the number of segments that the thing is divided into. So what's the frequency? Yeah, at about 6, I think maybe more accurately about 5.7 or so. So it's going up linearly, right? So this is n times some frequency. So maybe there's an n equals 1 here that would be at about, I don't know, you say 6, we'll try 6. Under these circumstances, it would look like this, right? So that the wavelength would be 2L. It's kind of hard to see because it's happening so slowly. But this is about 6. I'm not sure where the maximum is. Someplace around there. So this wave is called the fundamental. And all of these other things are called harmonics or overtones. And you can see that they're just multiples of the harmonic of the lowercase frequency. Now, I claimed that the frequency times the wavelength should equal a constant, namely the velocity. Is that true? So in general, the wavelength is 2L divided by n, and the frequency is n times the fundamental frequency. And yeah, those things multiply out to be a constant. And of course, that constant is going to be the wave velocity. Okay. Okay, so let's take a look at some of the problems. Okay, so a steel wire, they tell us the length and the mass, so we could figure out what the mass per length is. What tension does this wire have to be under? So it's going to vibrate at a middle C. And they tell us that a middle C is 261.6 hertz. So if the length of the wire is 0.7 meters, what's the wavelength of the fundamental? Yeah. No.
Wait, what's the original length?
The length of the string is 0.7.
Oh, right, yeah.
2L, right, in general. So the wavelength is 2L for the fundamental, which is in this case 1.4. The frequency we want to be 261.6 hertz. So we can immediately figure out what the velocity is. The velocity is just the product of the wavelength and the frequency. On the other hand, the velocity is also the square root of the tension divided by the mass per length. And what they're asking for is this thing here, the thing that's under the radical. So obviously we're going to want to square this equation, right? So we're going to get t squared is equal to, excuse me, when I square this, the radical disappears, and I get t over ml is going to be the wavelength times the frequency squared. So the tension then is going to be the mass per length times the wavelength times the frequency. And the mass, they're telling us, is 4.3 grams. Thank you. And the length is 0.7 meters. We've said that the wavelength is 1.4 meters because it's 2L, and the frequency wants to be 261.6 squared. We can check our units. So this is meters, frequency is per second, so this is going to be meters squared per second squared. We've got a meter down here to cancel out one of those, and we've got a kilogram. So we're going to have a kilogram meter per second squared, which is a newton, which is exactly what we want for a force like a tension. So we got 4.3, 10 to the minus 3, 0.7 divided by it, and 1.4 and 261.6, all of that quantity squared. And I get 824 newtons. Okay. So in a cello, the distance between the string and the nut is 68 centimeters. But typically you're going to finger it, so our finger is 20 centimeters from the nut. So here's kind of the picture. So this distance here is the 68 centimeters, and we're fingering 20 centimeters from the nut, which is to say the actual length of the vibrating string is going to be 48 centimeters. But we're producing the wrong tone. We want to produce orchestra A, which is at 440 hertz. Instead, we're producing a frequency of 449 hertz. So the question is, where should we put our finger in order to get what we want? (440 hertz). So does our finger want to move towards the nut or away from the nut? So we want to get a lower note. Yeah, so we want to finger someplace like there in order to get this frequency, but what number should we put there? Well, we know that the frequency times the wavelength should be the velocity, and the velocity is the same. It's the same string, it's under the same tension, so that should be a constant. So let me call this situation A and this situation B. So what I would have is the wavelength under situation A times the frequency of A. That's the always velocity, and that should be equal the wavelength under situation B times the frequency of B. If this is the fundamental, we know that the wavelength of A is 2 times 48 centimeters. We're told that we're out of tune and that the frequency is 449, whereas what we want is 440. So we can calculate what lambda is in situation B. Right, so lambda in situation B is going to be lambda of A times the ratio of the frequencies. So we've got 2 times 48, and then we've got 449 divided by 440. That's not where I want to put my finger, that's the wavelength, right? So I want to put my finger at half of that, because the fundamental has a wavelength that is twice the size of the string. Okay, so 449, 440, 48, 2 times it, and what I get is basically 98 centimeters. And that means that the length of the string wants to be half of that, which is 49 centimeters, which means I want to move 1 centimeter towards the nut from where I was. Yes?
Okay, so you said divide by 2 earlier or something, you have to take half of it to get what you... So can you explain why that is again?
So that's up here. So for the fundamental, the wavelength is twice the length.
Okay, right, and that's going to give you twice as much, so to get the length, okay.
Yep, so you can just put these things as being equal. Late wavelength divided by 2 will give me the length.
So how do you create stronger overtones or more of them? Do you know?
So, behind your question is the fact that if you're bowing or plucking, you're making all of these things simultaneously.
Right.
So that a piano hitting A doesn't sound like a violin hitting exactly the same A, because they have different combinations of overtones. So how can you change the collection of overtones that you have? Well, depending, so the only thing that you can control is where you pluck the string, right? Or how hard you pluck the string. That's about it. More questions? Oh, so there is something else you can do. Well, I don't know if this counts as cheating or not. If you simultaneously put another finger someplace else, you can keep the fundamental from forming. So if it wants to go in the fundamental, but I put my finger in the middle, then I'm going to damp that fundamental, and it will only be able to go in the overtone.
Oh, just like on a guitar, if you play the harmonics.
No. Never mind.
There's places where you can like go up an octave if you just place your finger on the string instead of holding it down.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, I believe that.
No, it's just like touching the string without pushing it down.
Okay.
Overtones. Or,
harmonics.
Yeah.
So you use the term octave. What's an octave?
That's a perfect eighth up from...
Well, what's a perfect eighth?
Yeah, interval.
What's a perfect eighth?
An octave would be twice the fundamental.
Yes. Yes, so an octave is a factor of 2 of frequency.
Is this that music class that they ask for physics? Is this mostly what they do in that music class?
Oh, they do. Wait, so what do I know? Ask Todd, he's teaching it. But I think the short answer is they got to do a lot more than this.
Right.
I suspect it's a very interesting class.
Yeah.
Do they have it on the MCAT?
No, it's not going to be on the MCAT. But it's the physics of music, right? So how musical instruments work and how human hearing works to create sound. Okay, so here we got a steel wire, 25 grams. They tell us the length, so we can figure out the mass per length. We're all good on that. So it's kind of this situation where they've got some... The distance between the pegs is not equal to the length of the strings, right? Because they've got some of it wrapped around a peg. So the actual length of the string is only 1.1 meters. And we're supposed to calculate a whole bunch of stuff. Well, the mass per length is about the easiest question you'll ever see, right? Because you just divide the mass by the length. I guess you do have to realize that it's the full length. Since you've got the full mass, you want to divide by the full length. So the mass per length is going to be the 25 grams divided by the full length, 1.35 meters. What velocity on the string will produce the desired fundamental frequency of 42 hertz, 41.2 hertz? Well, so we know that the velocity is equal to the wavelength times the frequency, and they've told us that the frequency is 41.2 hertz. And if we're in the fundamental, we know that the wavelength is twice L.
Is that the density?
No.
Because what would the
linear
density be?
Oh, yes.
It is the density?
So the word density by itself means mass per volume. And they are using an analogy to talk about the linear density as the mass per length.
Okay.
I won't ever do that. Okay, so we know the actual length of the effective length of the string is 1.1 meters. So we're all set to calculate the velocity. Calculate the tension required to obtain that velocity. Well, we know the tension is the tension when you divide by the mass per length is going to give you the velocity. So it must be then that if we square this, the tension divided by the mass per length is the velocity squared. Okay, so at this point, let's kind of calculate through some stuff. So we've got the 25 grams and the 1.35 meters. So that gives us the 1.85 times 10 to the minus 2 kilograms per meter. And here we have twice 1.2 times 41.2 to get the velocity. So 2.2 times 41.2 is 90.6 meters per second. And the tension then is the mass per length times that velocity squared. So I can square my 90.6, and I have my mu sitting in my calculator already, so I can multiply it in 2. And I get a tension that is 1.152 newtons. Doesn't seem right. Nope, it is right. Well, we calculated the wavelength along the way, right? I'm not sure why that question is occurring here. Right? The wavelength was twice the length. Oh, I know why this is here. What they want to do is to stress that the wavelength in the string is different from the wavelength in the air. Right? Because the wave velocity is different, but the frequency is the same. So when we're producing that note, it's still going to be at 41.2 hertz. But the velocity of sound is a lot more than 90 meters per second. They claim that it's 343 meters per second. So that's going to be the wavelength in air times this frequency. So we've got 343 divided by 41.2. And I get a wavelength that is 8.3 meters. Okay, so the wavelength in air is from here to the wall or something like that, whereas the wavelength in the string is just twice the length of the string. They don't have to be the same. Is that okay?
Okay, so the question with the string's vibration, that would just be the 2L, lambda or wavelength equals 2L. And then when they say the wavelength in the air, then it's that equation.
Yes. So it's always this equation that the velocity is equal to wavelength times the frequency. So I guess what is maybe implicit in this question is it's the frequency that's the same, right? If the string is vibrating at 41.2 hertz, then that's what you're going to hear. So the difference in velocity for the same frequency is going to lead to a difference in wavelength.
What's the units on the velocity?
Yeah. What are the units on velocity? Meters per second, right? More questions? Okay, so in the last problem, they wanted, I guess, to get you prepared for the final. So we have a problem that harkens back to mechanics problems. So we're back making free body diagrams and all of that sort of stuff. So instead of having a weight that's hanging off the side, what they have is this weight that's supported by an angle. And we're supposed to figure out what the tension is that's going to support that weight. And they've decided to tell us things in kind of funny ways. They've told us what the total length of the string is, and they've told us the length between those two supports. So we have to do some trigonometry and some vectors in order to answer what would otherwise be a pretty simple problem. So if there are 2 meters between the support, and the total is 5, then it better be 3 total on the edges. So this better be 1.5 on either side. And of course, we know these tensions are pulling like that, and the force of gravity is pulling down. And this thing isn't moving, so the sum of these forces have to add up to 0. It's pretty obvious that the forces in the x direction are going to cancel, one to the left and one to the right, so we need to take a look at the forces in the y direction. So how big is that force, say, from the one on the right? Well, so that force, it's a side that's adjacent to this angle theta, so it's going to be t times cosine theta. Well, what's theta? They didn't tell us. Well, if we kind of extend this triangle a little bit, then we have a physical triangle that is half of 2 on one side and has a hypotenuse of 1.5. So it must be that the sine of that angle is 1 over 1.5. So I can calculate the inverse sine of that. And I can plug it in there for theta to get cosine of theta.
Okay, so but that's finding, okay, never mind, that is finding that angle on the bottom, right? We're not finding
yes.
the one on the top?
We're not finding this one.
Okay.
We're finding that one.
Okay.
And that we're using sine because it's opposite over hypotenuse. Okay, so if we look at the whole story, there are 2 of those y forces that are pulling it up, and there's mg that's pulling it down, and the sum of those forces have to be 0. So Fy by itself has to be half of mg. On the other hand, Fy has to be t cosine theta. So it must be that the tension is the weight divided by 2 times cosine theta. So it's a lot of work to get a tension. But once we've got the tension, we've got the mass per length, so we can get the velocity, and we can start to go to the races. So let's calculate this tension before we go further. It's 12 kilograms that is hanging, so we have 12 times 9.8. And we've got 2 times the cosine of this angle, which I need to figure out by that method. So I got 1 over 1.5, and I'm supposed to take the inverse sine of that. Now, it doesn't matter whether I do that in radians or degrees as long as I'm consistent. But I kind of like degrees if I've got a choice. It turns out that this angle is about 41.8 degrees. So then I want to take the cosine of that angle and multiply it by 2, And all that goes in the denominator of 12 times 9.8. And what I get for the tension is 78.9 newtons. So the velocity of the waves in this string, of course, it's the square root of the tension divided by the mass per length. And they tell us that the tension, well, they tell us that the mass per length is 1/1000. So 0.001, I can divide that and then take the square root. And I get a velocity that is 281 meters per second. Okay, so all that's old stuff. The only new stuff is, given that picture on the right, what is the wavelength? Two-thirds L, and L is 2 meters, so the wavelength is going to be 4/3 of a meter. And I know that this velocity is equal to the wavelength times the frequency. So all I need to do is to divide by 1.333333 in order to get the frequency. And I get 211 hertz. That's what I got. Any questions? So we had this picture, and from this picture we had to figure out what the wavelength was. And if you look, there are three pieces that are equally sized, and we only need two of them, right, to make a wavelength. So we want 2/3 of the total distance, and the total distance was 2 meters, so 2/3 of 2 is 4/3. Say again? Why does it hurt? Because Avis doesn't go there, I guess. All right, any questions? All right, so this is kind of the main content, this picture of the harmonics that you can get for waves on a string. And the thing that's kind of hard to remember is that it's kind of 2L as opposed to L that enters into this wavelength formula. Other than that, it's pretty old news. Other than that, let you out way early for a change, I guess. So we said 12:30 Friday for help. You didn't want it, but you're going to get it anyway, a group quiz on this sort of stuff, on standing waves, and then lots of iQuiz questions kind of for review.
Are we being graded on the iQuiz questions?
There will be bonus points being given out. So everyone will get bonus points. They will write, they will be honest and put X's and O's on their group quiz. And those will be pure bonus points.
How much per
So you got your so it's going to be at standard times. And if you look up the standard times for our section, I forget which is which. For one of the sections, it's 8, and for the other one, I think it's 3:30. And you can come to either one. And if Monday doesn't work for you at all, you should drop me some email.
8 a.m. or 3:30?
I think so. And so they're going to take place here. Bailey. Did everyone else get their quiz?